Good morning. My name is Joe, and I am an alcoholic and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was supposed to have a speaker today, but my speaker canceled on me at the last minute. So I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM for allowing us the opportunity to share something about our alcoholism and the solution we have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions expressed here this morning are solely those of the individual who expressed them, not those of WHLL 1450 AM or Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. People helping people is focused on how A can provide help to men and women who have a problem with drinking. Alcoholics can be helped to stop drinking by other alcoholics who have achieved sobriety and who gladly share it. Like the people here today, one alcoholic helping another is the basic premise of the Fellowship of AA. Well over 2.9 million people in over 150 countries follow the AA recovery program. Here in Western Mass, we have over 400 AA meetings a week, with approximately 6,000 members staying away from a drink one day at a time. Alcoholism is recognized by the American Medical Association and the American Psychiatric Association as a disease. It is a progressive illness that can never be cured, but like some diseases, can be arrested. We feel that this disease is a combination of a physical sensitivity to alcohol coupled with a mental obsession. The best short description of what AA is and how it works that I know is what we call the preamble. I'll read it to you now. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Now, okay, today I had a speaker, but he canceled on me at the last minute. You know, recovery and sobriety, you know, puts us back into life, and things happen that we have to take care of, you know, and that's what we do. We show up for our commitments and we take care of what we need to take care of. Unfortunately, my speaker who I had an unforeseen event happen and he had to cancel today. And that's okay, you know, because, you know, things happen. So I'm going to share a little bit of my story with you guys, and hopefully somebody can get something out of it. You know, like I said, my name is Joe and I am an alcoholic, you know, and also when I introduce myself, I say I'm sober by God's grace, you know, and because I didn't come to Alcoholics Anonymous out of my own virtue, you know. A lot of people prayed for me, you know, and when I was out there, I was drinking and drugging because of the pain I was in, and I was using that to try to stop the pain, and I crossed a line somewhere along, and it wasn't working anymore. And I was trying to get some help for, you know, to quiet that mental anguish that I was in. And I was directed to a place when I was living in Boston called the St. Francis House. And they helped me out. They gave me a list of places to call. You know, and for some reason, I followed their directions because I was the type of person that didn't follow anybody's directions. You know, not even when I was growing up. I was always defiant, as they say. You know, so to go back in my history to look, you know, to try to figure out where, you know, I crossed that line or how I became the way I became. You know, I come from my two parents. You know, I have brothers and sisters. You know, I have one sister that also found recovery, and I have one sister that doesn't even drink. But I have another brother and sister that are actively drinking and doing other substances. But it's not my place to call them an alcoholic or drug addicts. They have to make that up for them, make their mind up for themselves. You know, and growing up, you know, there was things I shouldn't have been doing. It was things that my family shouldn't have been doing. But at the time where we were living and the way I was growing up, you know, it was very chaotic. They call it a dysfunctional home, you know. But at the time, that was normal to me. You know, I grew up in a time of the busing in Boston and the racial riots and all of that. So enough said about that. My father worked. My mother worked. My father did other stuff, you know, to make money for the house. You know, and he would bring home money, and I would help him count it. And he would sit there and you know, have his drink. He drank overproof rum. You know, so one time I got the courage. I got up the courage enough to ask him for some. And he gave it to me. You know, and didn't know how to drink. So I emulated him. You know, he poured in the poured the shot in the glass, and I just took it, turned it up, set the glass down, exactly the way he did it. You know, but somebody should have known something was wrong right off the bat, because I loved the taste, the way it tasted, the way it made me feel, the way it felt going down. I didn't make a face. I didn't spit it out. And right off the bat, I wanted more. You know, and that's how it would to be from then on. Every time I got something, I wanted more. And I found out in recovery, this is a disease of more. The more you do, the more you want. Is that mental obsession sets in, you know. I didn't know I had an allergy to alcohol at the beginning. Because once I put it in my body, it flipped a switch that made me crave it more and more and more. And I couldn't stop. You know, I was one of those drinkers, especially if I was out at the bar. I would drink and drink and drink until the bar closed. If I ran out of money, I would still stay there. And somebody got up from the table, I would take their drink and drink it. That's how I was, you know. I learned how to hustle at an early age, so it kept me in the mix. You know, so alcohol and other substances was always around. You know, high school age, I was running my own thing, my own little hustle, so I had money, I was making money. I had a car before I even had a license. You know, I caught the school bus to school one time. Because the only reason why I caught the school bus was because somebody wanted to buy something from me, and I met the school bus. And when we rode to school on the school bus, there was a riot happening, you know, and the bus got stoned and bottles thrown at it, and, you know, and that was the last time I ever caught a school bus to school. I drove to school ever since then, you know, and lucky I didn't get caught driving, one, without a license, two, with whatever I had in the car at the time, you know. In high school, all my whole 4 years of high school, I never made it to my homeroom class. One, I had to wait for the liquor store to open up. And two, whatever I bought, I had to drink it before, and I never made it to homeroom class. You know, and all through the day, I would hit the bathroom, you know, smoke a little something, drink, hang out, you know. And back then, you used to could go out for lunch outside. So I would head over to the local colleges that was around and make money and drink and hang out and come back late for school, you know. And that was all through my 4 years. You know, by time senior year, I was getting in trouble. You know, they had taken the National Guards out of school and replaced them with the police, you know. And one day, you know, after having a few in the morning, and by the time lunchtime rolled around, I had to head back to the liquor store because, you know, the pain in my head was going, and I had to quiet it, and I was heading out, and police officer grabbed me, and me and him got into it. You know, one thing led to another, and I ended up in jail, and, you know, and that's how my life went while I was drinking. You know, in trouble, you know, every time I got in trouble, I was had been drinking or doing other stuff. You know, and so I was well known with the local courts. So this time I went in front of a judge I had been in front of many times before, and I don't know, I guess that was when my first break was coming along. He gave me the choice of either going to jail or going to the military. And he would make it possible for me to go in by dismissing the charges that I was brought up on. So as, you know, if you come to meetings, you're here that, you know, as alcoholics, we are not dumb people. We just do dumb things under the influence, you know. And I knew I had an opportunity right there, you know, and doing my step work, which I will talk about that later on. You know, I found out that was my first detox. Because up until then, I had never had been sober more than a day. You know, I always had to have something to drink. And I was going in there with a plan. You know, I was going to change my life. You know, and there's, you know, different sayings around that. You know, if you want to tell your higher power a joke, tell them your plans. And my plan was to go in, because I was at a trade school by this time, and because I had been kicked out of a couple other schools. And I had been through some shops, and one of the main shops I really excelled in was the auto shop. One, because that's where everybody came looking for stuff, and I was the one that had it. And two, I loved working on cars and motors and doing the body work. And back then, you did a whole car. You just didn't focus on one thing. You did the motor, transmission, the body, you know. And I was pretty good at it, you know. So I had a plan. I was going to go in the military, and I was going to go in as aviation and work on jet engines. Because where I lived at in Boston, I wasn't too far from Logan Airport, and I could do my 4 years, get out, get a job over there, and live happily ever after. But as you can see, those plans didn't work out because, you know, it worked for a while. You know, I didn't really drink while I was, you know, after basic training when I got to my duty station, you know. But one of the first things when I got to my duty station, you know, I went to a squadron and they had lived in the barracks. And at first I was getting my tour. The main thing they focused on the tour was the lounge and the vending machines. And it was, you had a beer machine, you had a soda machine, two soda machines, plus your snack machines and your microwave and all that down there. But the person that was giving me the tour said, okay, in these vending machines right here, you're only going to have one soda machine. The other two are always going to have beer in it. And if it ever runs out, you call this number right here and it'll be over within an hour to restock it, no matter what time of day or night it was. So, with that said, you know, and they showed you where the PX was to get you a mini fridge to put in your room. And he was told me most people get these fridges and they keep their own beer and whatever in the fridge. So, but I didn't really focus on that. I said, okay, I want to do my job. I want to be good at my job. But after a while, I got bored. Boredom set in and the drinking started. And then the trouble followed behind that. I got bored with my job and started getting in trouble, and I started doing another job. And that job took me to places and things I had to do that affect me today, you know, and that's where my alcoholism took over at. I caught back up with myself. You know, I got out, was drinking real bad all the way up until, like I said, when the drink stopped working, you know, it stopped working. It stopped getting rid of the pain. And I ended up at the St. Francis House in Boston. And I got help. And the place that helped me was out here in Western Mass. And this life began. You know, for some reason I started hanging around with the people I seen who were doing what they would say they were doing, you know, and I was hearing things for the first time. I was listening to people. You know, a lot of people prayed for me to stop doing what I was doing, you know, and that's what it took for me to get to where I'm at, you know, the prayers of others, because I wasn't doing this voluntarily. You know, so this sober life that I have today is a result of, you know, doing the footwork, sticking around, and doing what was asked of me. And I was told I need to get a power greater than myself and stop trying to be that. You know, and I did that. And I call that power God today. You know, and they told me to get on my knees and beg for help, and I did that. You know, and the help came. It came through other people that are in recovery that have been around before me, you know, and they told me this is a one-day-at-a-time process, and I had to learn how to do that. You know, I had to learn how to live sober. And the directions for me to live sober were in what we call the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was looking for this big giant book, but it's a book that, you know, the founders of Alcoholics Anonymous and the first 100 put together, you know, for people like me. And I can find myself in that book throughout it, throughout the book, you know, and the steps are in it, the guide. The directions to life, to living for me, for living sober, you know, because I know how to live drunk. I know how to chase death, but my fear was living sober and living life. And that the Big Book of Alcoholics, the Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Believing in a God, you know, have taught me one day at a time to live life on life's terms, you know. It takes away the bitterness, it takes away the anger, you know, and it shows me how to walk one day at a time in a spiritual manner, you know. And one of the processes we have to do is give it back, and that's why I do this radio show, you know. And hopefully, you know, someone out there will hear it and hear the message and come into, you know, a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and sit down and just listen, you know. That's all you have to do. Just, you know, sit and listen. So, okay, I'm going to go through a couple of frequently asked questions now. You know, and a lot of questions people ask on their first time, you know, does Alcoholics Anonymous cost anything? No, Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't cost anything, but we are self-supporting, you know, because we paid our dues out there doing what we were doing. You know, you paid for your seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. So come in and take your seat, you know, but we are self-supporting. We don't ask any other organizations for help. You know, and another one is, like I said, what is the Big Book? The Big Book has the steps in it, and that's a guide to living. And they also have stories in the back of the book of people who have, you know, long-term sobriety and continue to stay sober one day at a time. They get their stories published in the book, you know. And another question is, how often do I have to go? For me, I have to try to go to a meeting every day because I drink every day, you know. So that's what I do. I try to go to a meeting every day. Do I make it to a meeting every day all the time? No, you know, because, you know, I'm living life now. I've got married in recovery. Because before coming into recovery, I was unemployable, unlikable. Nobody wanted me around. But today, you know, I'm employable. I can stick with a job. You know, people want me around today, you know. Another question is, you know, the steps. You know, people ask, what are the steps? You know, each step is a design for living, and it has a spiritual tool that you can use for each day. You know, and step one, you know, I had to admit that I was powerless over alcohol. And, you know, and that made my life unmanageable. That's the only step that you have to do 100% correctly. You know, all the other ones, you know, you do them to the best of your ability, you know, and there's 12 steps. You know, each step has a spiritual tool to it, like I said. So if you think you have a drinking problem or you know somebody who has a drinking problem, you know, I'm going to give you some information right here. So in closing, I would like to thank WHLL 1450 AM Radio again for being here. Before we go, I would like to make the audience aware of two AA committees that are available to the general public and to the professional community at large. They are the Public Information Committee and the Committee for the Cooperation with the Professional Community. For more information, please call our Western Mass Intergroup office at 413-532-2111 or write to them at Western Massachusetts Intergroup, 474 Pleasant Street, Holyoke, Massachusetts, 01040. We can also be found in your local telephone directory or online at westernmassaa.org. If you or someone you know is experiencing difficulty accessing an AA meeting, please contact our Accessibility Committee at 413-378-3752. For more information regarding Al-Anon or Alateen, please call 413-782-3406. These are both 24-hour open lines. Thank you for listening, and please remember, you don't have to stop drinking alone.